The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 433, to be broadcast Wednesday, March 12th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel, Ron's Rant of the Week. All you curmudgeons out there who criticized Tadej Pogačar for saying the S word in his interview after the Strada Bianchi.
People need to get over
this. Yeah, really. S does happen. By the way, it happens. Yeah. And I get it. Here's a guy. He's all bruised and cut up after being interviewed before receiving medical attention. Give him a break. There were riders lying on the ground everywhere, said D, as only 98 of 174 starters finished the men's race. Yeah, there were a bunch of crashes. Oh, by the way, there are two types of bike racers. Those who have crashed and those who are going to crash.
Yeah.
It happens to everyone sooner or later, even the top pros in the world. So anyway, we wish the best to Tadej Pogačar. You know, it didn't look real good, but you know what? He won the race anyway by like over a minute. He's Tadej Pogačar. He's a big deal. Anyway, we're going to move on. Positive side, voters approved $1.9 billion in the last election to support better places to ride your bike. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. Have you checked out the video I posted on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page and my YouTube channel from the friends over there on War and Cars? It's brilliant, really. It's a brief synopsis of how we can change the outlook of cycling with one good video run. Yeah, you know, the car companies do it all the time. I know I talked about that last week, but I'm just kind of trying to get people to push and promote this and send it on to any outlet you might have there. Please share that. It's really, really cool. And it's very inspiring. So, just 2 weeks away from this year's sixth annual Natchog Epic. And yes, your old pal Peddlin' Ron will be there. That's up at the Thompson Speedway in Thompson, Connecticut. We are going to be exploring some of the quieter roads that you're going to find in New England, up in the northeastern corner, otherwise known as the quiet corner of Connecticut. Although someone said they were trying to change the name of that. I really shouldn't change the name of that. It is the quiet corner. It'll always be the quiet corner as far as I'm concerned. There's some great dirt roads. There's some epic climbs. It's a crusher. I tell people only, don't come if you're like a little shy on this idea. But, you know, they usually get a big, big turnout, and I just spoke with the promoter a couple days ago, and it looks real good for a number of people showing up, so we'll get a good crowd once again. I am working the kids' ride this year. I'm nursing these legs of mine that don't seem to want to be working quite good enough, so I am going to be working it in a different capacity this year. That's what I'm looking at. So we shall see how that all works out. But anyway, I will be there, and I'll also be doing some announcing duties there too. And the Frozen Four is up and running. So the Frozen Four is a training race. It's out in Farmington, Connecticut. And we've gone through two weekends of the Frozen Four, and they're getting over 100 riders to show up to this, and that's really cool. So big shout out to those guys. There's two more to go. So keep that in mind too. if you're a road rider or an aspiring road rider and you want to learn a little bit more about bicycle racing on the road, the Frozen Four is the place to be. So you might want to check that out. Let's see. What else do we have? Ron's Mechanical Minute and Tips for the Week. Everything you need to know to master gravel. I figured I would, you know, talk about it a little bit because a big gravel ride coming up. It's a big event. It's if you're unfamiliar with it, you can go onto Bike Reg and you can sign up there. You can also find their webpage there too, which I probably have up here on my screen somewhere. But anyway, it's a different discipline. And I'm going to call it a discipline just because it does require you to have some skills in order to ride on some of the gravel that's out there. Now, we have some gravel roads on this ride which are really beautiful, and they're in pretty good shape, and they're not too difficult. And then we have some other stuff that's not. And we had a hard winter, so it's going to be wet in places. It's going to be kind of gouged out and rutted in other places. It's not going to be a super easy course to ride on, but you know, that's why a lot of people do gravel, because they like to do that. So anyway, I just thought it was kind of a fun thing to talk about here today. If I can just figure out where I put my link to it. And I think it's for everything you need to know to master gravel. And this comes from our friends over at Bicycling Magazine, and expert tips and advice and the very basics from gear, training, and grit to crush the unpaved road. So if you are a cyclocross person, as I am, former cyclocross person, still love to ride my cross bike, but not in a competitive fashion. Or if you are a mountain bike person, then gravel is probably the thing for you. You might want to give it a try. It's a lot of fun. Yes, they do make specific bicycles for this sort of thing, but it's not saying that your mountain bike or your cross bike wouldn't work well for this sort of thing also. My cross bike has been modified with lower gearing on it, so I can tackle some of the steeper stuff with it without dying out there. But you know, you can do that. You can use extra low gears, and a lot of the new gravel bikes come with these crazy low gears, gigantic pie plate type gears in the back, and it's a different beast. Now, what's the difference between a gravel bike and a cyclocross bike and a mountain bike? Well, not a lot. Okay, the gravel bike tends to be a road-looking bike, so it has drop bars on it, and it has, regular drop bar brakes, and you will find many of them just have a single chain wheel in the front, a chain ring in the front, and then a number of extra low gears in the back. They have extra clearance for fatter tires, so you can put a really fat 700C tire on there, sometimes fatter than you can on a cyclocross bike. So it's it gives you a little bit more option there, depending on what the conditions are for what you're doing for that particular event you're riding. Yeah, you can use a cross bike, and you can also use a gravel bike in a cyclocross race too. So there's a lot of crossover here. Mountain bike's a different beast because there are many varieties of mountain bikes that you could ride. I would consider something that was more cross-country oriented that probably would not have tons of suspension on it, because suspension is heavy and it makes it tough for climbing unless you have a lockout on your front fork. So, but you can do it. If that's what you have, then that's what you have. Most important is to show up and just pedal and have a good time. And so anyway, there can be some really challenging conditions. And generally speaking, when you're on some of these dirt roads, especially up here in the northeastern corner of Connecticut, you're going to find that the absence of cars is a very, very pleasant part of the journey. And we do have that even on our paved roads out here. We have some very, very quiet roads. And we get a lot of people that come in out of the Boston area that actually that participate in this event. And they're all just like blown away at how few cars there are, because they're so used to riding with whatever it is, 7 or 8 million people or whatever you have in that Boston Beltway. There's a lot of people up there, and there's a lot of cars, needless to say. But then you get out there into Thompson, Connecticut, and you are in the middle of nowhere. So it's kind of cool. It's a lot of fun. You can choose a number of different distances to go on this particular ride, depending on what you're looking for. But you might be, you know, you might be a novice rider, you might be someone who's been doing this for a while, and it's just, it's fun. It's another way to get together and have some fun on a bicycle. So what is gravel? It remains mostly undefined, which is exactly the point. That's what it says here. One person might imagine quiet, slightly crunchy roads. Another might see challenging, steep, cratered out boulder pock trails. You get both of those. Definitely get both of those. I took Fran on a gravel ride a number of years ago, and we came down out of the Natchog Forest, and we went on a road which I don't think has seen a vehicle on it other than maybe a logging vehicle for the past, I don't know, 80 years. It was treacherous descent.
Baby heads.
Yeah, but that was more than baby heads on that one. That one was really hard. But, you know, it was, and it popped out on one of our favorite roads here, North Bear Hill Road. Really fun. But there are ways around that, and yeah, they didn't use the way around that are also dirt-oriented. But anyway, you never know what you're going to get, because it all depends on what the promoters put together for routes, and you can get yourself into places that you're very, very comfortable, and you can also get yourself in places that you might be a little over your head. It is not illegal to get off your bike and walk should you feel that you're not able to accomplish the road that is in front of you. That's not a problem at all. As a matter of fact, Richard told me, because I'm running, I'm going to be working with the kids' ride this in 2 weekends, that he said, be prepared to walk. He said, I think you're going to have to walk in a couple of spots. And, you know, and I'm going to have kids, and I'm going to have their parents with me, and that sort of thing. So anyway, that's my responsibility to the ride. So there's different categories that are labeled. Category 1, which is smooth, hard, road bike friendly dirt, to a category 4, which is deep ruts, rocks, potential landslides, best handled with high volume mountain bike tires. You know, depends on what you're looking for. So, you know, if you want to choose a gravel bike, there's all sorts of selection out there right now, because gravel became the latest thing that everyone who already owns a bike needs to have. And, yeah, I say that very loosely, but it's the bicycle industry that I grew up with for so many years and ended up retiring from after 44 years in it. There seems to be a lack of imagination in the bicycle industry as to how to get new people on bikes. That's just an observation and personal criticism. But, you know, people already have. I mean, how many bikes do you have? N plus one, right? How many is the correct amount? N plus one. But, you know, there's also the you know, you can always build another garage, put the bikes in there. But we tend to, in this industry, the tendency is to sell the person who's already the enthusiast yet another way to ride a bike, which isn't really growing the industry, which is yet a source of controversy and on and on and on. Anyway, I'm going to try to stay out of that. So you can get in on a low budget bike, or you can spend, you know, your retirement fund on a bike too, no matter, you know, whichever you're looking for. But there are different types of things that you you can get as far as your bike. If you already have the bike, and you got to remember that there's some things you're definitely going to want to carry with you when you're out there on the bike. You want to carry either a patch kit, and if you have a patch kit with you, make sure you have a boot with it, just in case you really slice a tire badly, you want to be able to fix that. Multi-tool, absolutely. Includes a chain tool, has to. And I would also, along with the chain tool, I would also bring spare links, you know, the little quick links, master links. Definitely want to bring that with you. Make sure you have the right size for your bike. If you have any questions about any of this, go see your local bike shop. They're there to help you, and they're still there. Surprisingly enough, at this point, we still have local bike shops. It's a beautiful thing, although we are losing them right and left. Please support your local bike shop so they can still be there when you need them. Ron can only do so many repairs in his garage. a spare tube or two, even if you're using a tubeless tire. Yeah. It's all true. You may need a spare tube, and your tubeless tire, if you're out in a very remote place on a gravel ride, you may have some difficulty reinflating it if you happen to puncture in some way and it doesn't seal off. So I would definitely carry a couple of tubes with me if I were doing especially a longer event. Totally. And of course, if you're riding on tubeless tires, you need a plug kit for those times when you puncture and you get a hole that's too big for the sealant to fix it. So yeah, it's funny because I grew up in my dad's gas station, and we would repair people's tires a lot because they come in, they have a flat tire. We'd find out that they had a nail in the tire or whatever. And, you know, we had basically plug kits that you pushed this thing through the hole, and you gave it a big, big twist, and then you pulled it back out and then sliced it off with a razor blade on the other side. And that worked really good for keeping the tire sealed. So it's kind of a cool thing. So they make them for bikes now, too. Of course they do. So a seat bag or a handlebar bag, some sort of a bag to carry all your stuff in, because you definitely want to carry some stuff with you. You want to carry a couple of water bottles or hydration bags, quite honestly, depending on how long your ride is, they're really, really handy, especially if you're bouncing around off-road a lot or on a really bumpy surface. It's really hard to pick up that water bottle and put it up and take a drink out of it. In addition, when you do, you're going to find that maybe your water bottle is covered with mud from the last puddle you went through. A little gritty, that sort of thing. So, you know, the hydration bag gives you the ability to have something really close to your mouth that you can, you know, bite down on and take a drink. So I think a hydration bag might be a better choice. And depending, of course, once again, on the distance that you're going and the difficulty of the ride. GPS unit, yeah, bring your computer. And you know, that is something you can't 100% rely on either. I mean, hopefully you've downloaded the ride to the point where you don't have to rely on middle of nowhere communication devices, because that can be a problem. Yeah, it can definitely be a problem. So I tell people, you know, if there's a paper copy, just stuff it in your back pocket just in case. Because that's super important. Lights, do you need lights? Hopefully you're not staying out that late. Hopefully you're not starting that early. But yeah, you might want lights. I keep lights on my bike all the time anyway, because there are times when you go out onto the road and, you know, you have some traffic, and I like to have my lights on my bike just to let people know that I'm there. So how much equipment you bring is completely up to you and what you think you may need, but I would say it's good to bring the basics for sure, and maybe a little extra just in case. I also like to take some, this is kind of a super duper old time emergency kit, but I would take a little duct tape. you know, good old duct tape, and just kind of roll it up and keep a small amount of it in my seat bag for just in case, because you never know, the boot might not work that you're using to repair the inside of the tire that's been ripped too badly, whatever, and duct tape it'll get you by in an emergency. So you never know, that can work too. So there are some specific techniques that will make it so that your gravel ride can be more enjoyable. And you really need to pay attention, like on rough descents, you have to take a look at your position on the bike. And you also have to understand that, you know, you're going to need a larger volume tire, which can therefore absorb a lot of the bumps. And yet you got to get the pressure just right. Otherwise, you're going to pinch that tire. Or if you're using a tubeless tire, they say, the people from They, you know those people, right? They say that you don't get as many flats with tubeless tires. Not going to go along with that one. You know me, I'm an old curmudgeon. I complain about tubeless tires all the time. I'm not a big believer in them. And, you know, but I know it's the trend and it's what everybody rides, and I got all that. But anyway, I like having tubes. I just like having a tube in a case like that, or a tubular tire is another wonderful thing to have, although they tend to be a little bit more racing-oriented and a little delicate for a gravel ride. I would probably be more inclined to ride a clincher tire with a heavy-duty tube in it. No lightweight stuff. Don't mess around. You know, I mean, what's another few grams of weight in your tube if, you know, you've got the durability and the dependability of the fact that you're not going to get a flat. Enough said, I'm there. All right, the other thing I also tell people about too, if you're going to do a lot of gravel riding, is, and you are using tubes, make sure you get a tube with a replaceable valve on it that you can unscrew and put some sealant inside the tube and then put the valve back on. They're available, they're out there, and that gives you a little extra piece of security just in case. So, and tends to be a lot less messy when you get a big bad flat tire than the tubeless tires get. Tubeless tires, the sealant goes everywhere. Yeah, I'm trying not to gripe about it too much, but I'm not a big believer in that. So what do you have to do here? You have to start thinking about, when you get on the bike, you have to think about what position you are on the bike. If I'm going down a hill, I'm really stretching my weight out over the bike. So I've got my butt way back over the back of the saddle on a really steep descent, because I want to make sure that my rear end doesn't come up off, the rear end being the bike, not my butt, but anyway, the rear wheel doesn't come up off the ground when you're going downhill, because you can get yourself in a lot of trouble really, really quickly. And so your weight position on the bike is key here. You want to really stretch the weight out as much as you possibly can, because it will make a big difference in your ability to control that bike. So definitely is something you want to look at. When you're way back off the back of the saddle, you're generally probably going to be like lifting yourself, elevating yourself slightly off the seat. Not a lot, because you want to be able to still clamp your legs around the edges of the saddle to maintain stability on the bike itself. And that would be a really good way of doing it, is to make sure that you can squeeze your legs together and still have that saddle right there. But if you get off the saddle, your body tends to pick up the impact a little bit better, and it keeps you in better control. So position is everything in life, and it's especially when you're on a gravel bike or a cyclocross bike or a mountain bike, you really want to make sure that you have your weight distribution really, really even when you're riding on the bike. And it's going to require some effort. It's going to require you to hold your body in that position. So working on making sure that your core is nice and fit as far as that goes is super, super helpful. It's helpful anyway, but it's especially helpful when you're riding on rough surfaces like this. So there's some things you can learn, like strength training for gravel. That's something you want to look at. You want to really work on maybe working on, you know, squats and different things like that. Arm strength, really, really important. You want to work on that. That's also helpful. Squats are really good because they'll strengthen your legs. If you're hearing this now and going to do the gravel ride in 2 weeks, you're probably a little too late to get this done unless you've been working on it all winter long. Maybe you've been spending some time in the gym, or maybe in your house or apartment's training area where you have your bike set up on the trainer or whatever you do. But you want to make sure your body's pretty tight and tough for this sort of thing, because it really, really makes a big, big difference. Deadlifts, full squats, you know, yeah, they work really good, but you got to watch your knees, just be careful, that sort of thing. But you can do a lot. So handling the extremes, that's something that you also have to pay attention to. And the extremes being, it could be just an extreme surface underneath you as far as the gravel goes and the ruts and the you know, as what Fran call them, the baby heads.
Baby heads.
That's
big,
what.
Big rocks,
yeah, those round bouldery things that make your wheels slide down the side of them. So, you want to be able to handle that sort of thing. The thing that I always tell people when they're riding on gravel and or any kind of off-road surface is, do not fight with the front end of the bike. That's a critical issue right there. If you fight with the front end of the bike, you're probably not going to be able to keep the bike up. If you let the front of the bike kind of drift side to side, wherever it may be, especially if you're in like a deep sand surface or a mud type surface, and just apply as much power and wattage as you can to the rear wheel, you almost always, not always, but you almost always can ride out of a situation like that. The other thing you have to watch out for, though, is it's March. It's two things that happen in March, the NCAA tournament and, sorry, I'm a basketball freak here. I live in the basketball capital of the world. And it might still be frozen in places. There might be ice. And there will probably be moisture, because through the winters we gather a lot of weather, and either in the form of snow or rain. And so you got to look at your weather conditions and maybe listen to your local, you know, Pedlin' Ron race announcer, event announcer guy who says, hey, the weather out there is going to be this today. And right now it's only 27 degrees out. So please be careful for ice patches. So listening to announcements before you begin your ride is a good idea. Also, if you have a weather app of some sort on your portable phone, then, you know, you can always check the weather too. But I do not depend on all of that being completely accurate. So if you're anywhere near the freezing point or have been for the last few days, you got to really keep your eyes open for ice, because ice is not forgiving at all. So you got to watch for that sort of stuff. So gravel riding can turn into gravel racing. There's a lot of these gravel rides have segments on them, and the segments tend to be the more difficult parts of the course that you're on, and that's why they put them in, because they have a timing strip on the road that's that you ride over, and then another one on the other side that you ride over. So there's a little competition involved here too, if you want to. Or you can just look at that and laugh and say, not me, I don't care, and just ride your bike. just have some fun, ride your bike. You know, that's what this is all about. But anyway, gravel's fun and gravel is happening and it's just a great, great thing to do. If you're looking to enhance your cycling skills, oh my God, gravel, it's great. Gravel's great and so is cyclocross. Then, and you know, even if you live in a place like I live right here at Mansfield Hollow Park, we have 2300 acres of both lake and off-road surfaces. And you know, if you only have an hour to ride and you want to go out and get a little workout in, just go ride off-road for a little while, work on your skills, you know, you'll find that you will become a much better rider if you do this. I have made a number of people who have come to me over the years and wanted to get into the whole bike racing thing. I generally require them, if they want my help, to spend one season on a cross bike before getting out and hitting the road. And so far, over the years, for as many people as I've introduced to bicycle racing, they all come back to me afterwards and thank me a few years later and go, you know, that was like the smartest thing I ever did. Because, you know, you get yourself in situations and now you know how to handle your bike when things get a little dicey. So it's a good thing. So that, and definitely if you're going to do a lot with your body off-road, you definitely want to work on your core strength and your shoulders and your arms, and got to get everything nice and tight because you're going to need it. You're definitely going to need it, especially if you're really in a tough situation climbing a very, very big, big hill. You're gonna find yourself using a lot of muscle and a lot of power to be able to do it. So if you're looking to help out with your strength, the recommendations that are out there, this is all very, very general, but on lightweight days, you perform 2 sets of 10 to 12 reps, and that's it. Just lightweights, high reps, simple. On medium days, you do 3 sets of 8 to 10 reps. And on heavy weight days, when you go to real heavy weights, you only do 4 sets and 4 to 6 reps. So don't overdo it. Don't hurt yourself. You want to be able to ride your bike. That's the end result, is you want to be able to ride your bike. So there's a lot of ways you can challenge your muscles and you can get stronger, and all of this will help you with your position on the bike. And as I also have mentioned, because I started seeing a chiropractor a few weeks back, the chiropractic care has been really better for my position on my bike too. I find myself in less discomfort when I'm down in the drops than I used to be since visiting with the chiropractor. There's definitely some flexibility things that have changed, and so that makes a big, big difference. I also do a lot of lightweight workouts through the week because I teach classes that are requiring lightweights to be in the classes, so I play around with that. Always work on your balance. Balance is good because balance is needed. And so there's a lot of little things you can do to make yourself stronger and better for your ride. And all the bottom line is it makes your ride more enjoyable. And that's really what we're looking for. That's it. We just want to have fun, right? All right, let's move on to something else here. Okay, on to the voters approved $1.9 billion to support better places to ride, to bike. This is from People for Bikes, and they track 17 bike-related measures on local and state ballots across the country. They had a campaign that was called Vote for Bikes campaign, and there was a site you could go to from their website, and if you clicked on that, you went to the Vote for Bikes page and you saw how other pro bike measures did in your area and around the country. So there's ways of looking this all up, but there's definitely some things that happened in Texas. Texas residents overwhelmingly voted to invest $1 billion into the creation and improvement of state parks. and this will monumentally expand recreational riding beyond the existing 700 plus miles of bike trails, provide funding for trail maintenance, and allow state parks to meet growing demand for recreational opportunities in the Lone Star State. Now, let's hope that nothing got cut there, but as we know, we're living in a rather unstable government right now here in this country, here in the United States, and hopefully funds have not been cut to your state or, you know, your area, but you know, recreation, outdoor activities, I think are more important than anything else out there. And yet the budget cuts have been severe, probably by someone who does not ride a bike, by the way. I don't even think that our current president rides his bicycle to McDonald's to get his horrible food. But anyway, you know, it's what you're working with. We're working with a bunch of like-minded people, I would guess, in the bicycle world that enjoy their bodies and taking care of their bodies and themselves and their health. And unfortunately, there's not as many of us as there is of them. It's not that we can't change that. We certainly can. But anyway, that's what we've got. There's a Greenways 5 levy in Bellingham, Washington, and it replaces an expiring levy in order to revamp and build an equitable and sustainable trail system that will aid in enhanced active transportation and recreational opportunities in Bellingham. So these are things like we have all these rail trails out this way too, and what unfortunately people don't understand about them is they're not just there for recreation. You can use them for transportation. I can get on my bicycle and I can ride, oh, I don't know what, it's just less than 2 miles, and pick up a trailhead from my house, and I can literally ride my bicycle to Hartford, which is over 30 miles from here. And I can do most of it on trail, almost all on trail. So, you know, transportation is all part of this thing too, which really, really helps. So, you know, we have other places that people are working on to make cycling safer in big cities. There's a lot of work going on in New York. Boston has been way up in the forefront on this. They've done a lot of really good things. And so there are bits of action around the country that are definitely responding well to the alternative transportation aspect of cycling too, which I think is very, very important, because we're talking not only about less pollution, but we're also talking about health and fitness and, you know, just ways to kind of relieve the congestion that we have on the roads out there. So it's all good. It's all good. Anyway, there's lots of other places that have infrastructure changes that are happening. Colorado, we've constantly got things going on even in Connecticut. We have improvements on trails. We have bridge projects that are due to happen within the next couple of years as I talk more and more to people who are aware of that sort of thing. And, you know, it's only getting better. I never thought in my lifetime I would see half of what I've seen already. So stay on it, folks. You got to talk to people about it. You've got to be an advocate for your sport. It really, really helps a lot. This is your passion. And that is something that I am constantly pushing on here at Bicycle Talk, because if you don't mention something or say something about it, no one's going to do anything about it because they'll find ways to spend money in many, many different ways. Why not do it for something that's good for you and all others too? So if you've ever attended a town meeting and you wanted to support a proposed bike lane or trail or even a roundabout going in town that, you know, there's so many people that hate roundabouts. They don't like them at all. Traffic circles, roundabouts, whatever you want to call them. I call them, you know, vehicle movement centers because they move 33% more vehicles than a traffic light does and a whole lot safer. But that's beside the point. When you want to make that point and your town is talking about possibly taking out a traffic light and putting a big circle in instead, go there with the ammunition, go there with the facts and figures and talk to them about it because there are, there's just so many studies out there that have shown the viability of putting in a, taking out a traffic light and putting in a traffic circle. Basically, what happens is people stop dying at intersections. And I'm not just talking about people on bicycles or walking. I'm talking about people in cars and trucks because if there's a light, there's always someone who's going to run it. And when they run it, they're not generally going the speed limit when they do that. So the impact can be really severe. So, you know, a new bike lane, anything like that, you want to get out there and you want to make sure that you're part of the conversation. I think that's the key part. Bicycling is good for the planet. That's your number one key point right there. Explain to people why bicycling is so good. If you take a look at, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, transportation makes up 28% of the total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. 57% of those emissions come from passenger vehicles. When we build more and better bike lanes, the environment benefits are clear. Higher bike ridership, less driving, and overall reduction in emissions. This is not rocket science, folks. It's just science, as I like to say. Researchers at Carnegie Mellon found that even if 10% of short car trips during peak afternoon travel were replaced with micro-mobility, more than 4,800 car trips would not happen, decreasing vehicle miles traveled by more than 7,300 miles a day, while this would translate to a 2.76 reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, it would only be possible with wide-scale bike lane deployment. The study confirms that similar findings from McGill University, Spotlight Bike Infrastructure in Montreal, as well as research from the Institute of Transportation and Development Policy, which found new bike lanes lowered emissions in China and Colombia, and other European cities too. So there's just a lot. The European cities are way ahead of the game on us on this one, way ahead of the game. So it's kind of hard to see any major improvements there because they just keep working on it as they're going along. If you build it, people will bike. If you ask most people why they don't bike, they'll likely name safety as the key concern. A nationwide study from the National Institute of Transportation and Communities found that a whopping 2/3 of the U.S. residents would be more likely to bike if they were separated from cars by a physical barrier. Yay. There's so much research that show that people will bike in cities and if you build a good infrastructure. Overall, the average protected bike lane sees the bike counts increase 75% in the first year alone. So, it's all about the infrastructure, folks. It's all about putting those really nice, safe, barriered lanes in. And there's a number of ways you can do that. Once again, there's a ton of information available out there that will explain to you how it's done and the presentations that you can make to your local governments and tell them to fix this thing. Fix it. Okay. Buffered bike lanes, they were installed in Philadelphia's Spruce and Pine Streets. Bike traffic increased by 95%, while intersections in Montreal with protected bike lanes saw 61% more bike traffic than comparable intersections with no bike infrastructure. There's also evidence that protected bike lanes are better for bike share. You know, like the city bikes that you can, you know, you get a little app and you can pick the bike up off the rack and take it somewhere, and it's got a GPS unit on it so they know where it is, and hopefully you return it back to where you got it from or to another bike rack that is in your city. But those programs work. They work really, really good, and it's really kind of a cool way of getting around. We might have to explore that. I'll talk to Fran about that. I'm going out to Chicago in early April to go to my son's wedding, and I do not plan on renting a car because last time I was in Chicago, we just used the bus and the train to get around, and it was really easy. So, but there's a lot of bike lanes there too, and I have to check and see what a city share app would cost for just a few days of being out there. We can just use them because they're all over the place. So that's kind of a neat thing. Changes changed a bike mode share. They have nearly quadrupled in many cities when you have protected bike lanes and bike share apps and bike shares out there. Yeah, protected lanes are better than sharrows or standard bike lanes. Big time. Sharrows, otherwise, from one of my my friends who used to be out at BCCO in Hartford, Tony Sorolis, he said that sharrows were the toilet paper of cycling safety. Yeah, I think he's right. I think he is. Sure, we paint these big, huge things in the road. Who sees them? That's the big question. Who sees them? The people on the bike see them because you're riding over them. You're seeing the small sign on the side of the road, and you know what it means. But the people who drive monstrous vehicles think that that's because you're in the wrong on your bicycle, and you need to share the road with them. They don't get it. It just kind of doesn't communicate well, let's put it that way. So sharrows are kind of a waste of time and effort as far as I'm concerned. I see them all over the place. I see the signs all over the place, but whether or not they make my road safer, I don't think so. I really don't. So a bike symbol is helpful, but it really doesn't make the road safer. What really makes the road safer, if you're trying to build that infrastructure, is to have a protected bike lane. And there's, again, so many great ways to do it. It just has to get done. And it will narrow the streets, and it will slow the traffic down, which I know is not what people who drive cars and trucks want to hear, but that's what it does. So we're all hoping, with our fingers crossed, that within the next year or less, things really implode with what's going on in DC right now. And, you know, maybe we can make sure that some of these funds don't get axed, or some of these agencies won't be disappeared because of saving money so that the billionaires can pay less taxes. That's it. That's my statement. Terrible statement, I know. But it is what it is. So infrastructure design is a key factor here. And again, there are just so many places. If you go to People for Bikes, you can click on a number of different places that will guide you in the direction of learning more about how to build bicycle infrastructure in your area. By the way, did I happen to mention bicycles are really good for public health? Yeah, really good. Okay, people who ride bikes have a better health outcome due to increased physical activity, improving cardiovascular health, reducing stress levels. At a 2015 Columbia University study showed that New York City's $10 million investment in bike and pedestrian improvements resulted in an estimated societal health savings benefit of $230 million. $10 million investment, $230 million savings benefit. Put another way, every $1,300 New York invested in building bike lanes provided benefits equivalent to one additional year of life at full health over the lifetime of all city residents. That's a big deal. Want to live longer? Ride your bike. Yep, that's true. This is Bicycle Talk. That's all we talk about. That's what we will continue to talk about. Ride your bike. It's really, really good for you. And it's good for all of us, too, at the same time. Let's see here. The benefits don't stop there. A PLOS medicine study showed that people who began bicycling regularly after the age of 50 saw a 20% decrease in the risk of type 2 diabetes. We have a crisis in this country with type 2 diabetes. Ask Fran. She'll tell you all about it. Yes. She sees them all the time. And so start riding your bicycle and there's a 20% decrease in the risk of type 2 diabetes. That seems worth it alone right there. Because you don't want to get yourself married to sticking yourself with drugs all for the rest of your life. That's no good. Okay, and my favorite part, and truly my favorite part, bike lanes and trails are good for business. Really good for business, yeah. When you put bike lanes in, you A, slow the traffic down. You B, allow more people to go to a business because there's more places to park and there's not a problem of driving around trying to figure out where I'm going to park, where am I going to, well, that parking garage is too far away or this or that, whatever. This is, it just cleans things up big time, really, really big time. So I will continue to talk more about this in the future. I want to jump forward here in the show because we're getting, we're starting to run out of time here. And I really want to talk to you a little bit more about the bicycle racing world because there's all sorts of good bicycle racing going on. The Strada Bianchi was last weekend, and three-time winner Tadej Pogačar wins the race over a minute with a crash. Tom Pidcock was the closest rider to him, but he was still over a minute behind him. And the crash was kind of crazy. It was, and I have a quote here from Tadej Pogačar. He said, "A win is a win, but it could have been better if I hadn't crashed." "I know this road very well, but I misjudged and I just went too fast." And he did. He went around a corner. He went into the corner way too hot and the bike slid out from underneath him. And now he's down on the ground. Not only is he on the ground, he's off the road. He's down an embankment on the other side. It's quite a spectacular crash. He got style points for that one. He just went too fast. And that really is a problem. And he said he really enjoyed riding after the crash until he crossed the finish line, but then he started feeling the pain. He had to change the bike and was worried that you never know the consequences of the crash, but he had to finish it off. So the race went super fast and it was a really strong breakaway. It's great to know that I have a gravel sector to my name after this third win. Yeah, the place where Tadej crashed. Great. So, but, you know, people crash. It happens. So Tadej did really, really well, and he will be back for a lot more bicycle racing in the future here. I'm sure we're going to see so much from him. And then there's a whole calendar of races coming up right now. If you go to the UCI site, you can find all the pro races, the UCI races that are coming up through the season. And of course, that includes the classics like the Tour de France and the Giro d'Italia and the Vuelta a España, all the big ones. The Paris-Nice is going on right now, so that's another early season race which is happening. There's just tons and tons of bicycle racing. But really what there is locally, there is the Natchog Epic, which is coming up again in a couple of weeks. And I like to help my friend Richard out with this because it's a great event. It also has a subtitle, The Quiet Hell of Thompson, Connecticut. And it is the Sunday, March 23rd, and the registration is open on Bike Reg. So if you go to domesticevents.com, you can find the Natural Epic on there. And there's some great pictures from last year. And there's a little video in the beginning, and it shows it's actually also on YouTube. You can look it up on YouTube. And it shows everybody riding out from the Thompson Speedway and heading out onto the road and not-so-road. So anyway, good stuff. Supports a lot of nonprofits also. The fundraising goes along with it, including our friends over the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program, and the Wyndham Land Trust, the Best Buddies people. There's all sorts of good people that this helps out. So we have this event. It's coming up, and it is definitely epic. I will give you that. It definitely has an epic outlook to it. And it will be, let me see here, I have my distances here. It's kind of in an events category here, but just so you know here, he says here, we build this event to be the first test of a New England bike rider's legs, skills, fitness, and resolve. While we typically include a string of classic unpaved sectors, our course team always finds a few new elements to include. So there's five different distances and start times, and there's an 84-mile ride that starts at 9, a 68-mile ride starts at 9:30, an explorer ride that rides at 55 miles at 10 a.m., an express ride at 35 miles at 11 a.m., and the Tri-State Kids ride will be 10 miles and start at around 11:10 a.m. Yeah, Tri-State, you're going to be able to go through three states in 10 miles. Kind of cool.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's way up in the corner on the kids' ride. So all those kids, they can say, well, you did 84 miles, but I rode through three states today. There you go. And grown-ups are welcome also. We do have an adult category for that. So all the event entries include stocked rest stops and sag support and mechanics on. Before the ride, on bike and course, on course, mechanical support, and post-event celebration meal with awards. Top finishers will be recognized in several divisions. So anyway, all good stuff coming up. 82 miles, 60 miles, 48 miles, 32 miles, 10 miles, roughly. Let's see, the Frozen Four is still going on, so we've still got that happening. The National Bike Summit, March 11th through the 13th. That's happening in a few days in Washington, D.C. And the, let's see here, March 18th, we have the Ciclismo Classico Bicycle Film Festival at the Somerville Theater in Somerville, Massachusetts. And that is kind of a cool event of all sorts of, I'm going to call it eclectic films about bicycles. Very, very cool. The Ride of Silence is back for 2025 right here in Storrs, Connecticut, May 21st. And it's also a worldwide event. It's always the third Wednesday in May. And ours will be starting at the Town Hall and Community Center on South Eagleville Road in Storrs, right on the corner of South Eagleville and 195. Everybody goes slow, everybody has fun, everybody stays quiet. And let me tell you how hard that is for my friend Billy and I, because we do not like to stay quiet. But anyway, it's good. It's a good event. It's only 3 miles long, and it's a great statement. And if even if that's all you do for advocacy for the year, I would really appreciate your being there. So, finishing points, it's 2025. What do you say? Push a strong campaign for riding bicycles and reducing city congestion and find out what New York City has done about a great, clean way to inspire the economy. And this isn't rocket science or brain surgery. It's simple common sense. And we're resorting back to the pleasures of riding your bike. America, you want throwback to when times were great, right? Get a bicycle. This very well could be the answer. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. You got to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and lack of places to safely ride your bike. And just get out and ride your bike and talk it up in your community. Take the Pedal and Ron Challenge. Consider parking your car for one day, just one day out of the week, and just use your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this program, of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bikes and ride!